This is your World War III update, phoning it in once again from the acoustically challenged tractor on this very smoky homestead, trying to get it in during peak season. Typically, we like to do the multimedia presentations where I aggregate and disseminate and analyze all the information, and I try to do the topics justice. Usually, those videos are almost an hour long. Lately, I just haven't had the time because we're trying to exploit peak season here on the new homestead, which in order to get something like this up and running, it takes a hell of a lot of work. And I'm 110% convinced that if you are afraid of hard work, or you just like to procrastinate, or if you're somebody who thinks you're just going to buy your way into salvation post-apocalypse, I regret to inform you that the process will not be automated, no matter how much money you throw at it. Okay, I'm sure there's some turnkey solutions out there, but by and large, you're going to be getting your hands dirty. You're going to be asshole and elbows deep in the shit if you want to have the regenerative systems in place that you're going to need to survive long term. That's what I've been preoccupied with right now. Now, recently, I was traveling. In fact, for the past week, I was away from the homestead, which is why I'm at a war with nature once again to try to get things back to homeostasis. But I was away and there was a power outage where I was, and of course I took a plane there, so I didn't have all my fancy EDC gadgetry, because I do carry on. I don't want to be bothered with having to check in the bags and all that stuff for such a short trip. So it was interesting. I was in a restaurant and I got some footage of it, and it was just kind of weird to see a power outage and it was prolonged. It wasn't a thunderstorm or anything like that. Apparently some bird flew into a transformer, so they claim. Anyways, it's kind of weird because that's what we got to talk about today, among many other things, but the Paris power outage. How weird is that? I mean, is that just normal? Are we just considering that to be normal, like the opening ceremonies of the Olympics, which I'm sure many Christians today are rejoicing now that Paris has been stricken down by the hand of God, as they would claim, for what appeared to be some sort of thespian Hunger Games-like allegory opening ceremony for the Last Supper. Some very colorful characters reenacted that. I won't get into the details, but it pissed a lot of people off. And that's, of course, the point of that stuff, guys. The point is to piss people off, to divide people a lot, to keep attention away from the major wars that are flaring up all around the world, and the crumbling infrastructure, the collapsing economy, etc., etc. But it is quite interesting that only the next day, Paris suffers this major power outage. Now, they're saying this might be, they being the internet, are saying this might be a cyber attack. As of the time of making this video, I'm not sure if it's been determined or if it's been disclosed what the cause of that is. Of course, they're going to try to find some way to blame it on the Axis of Evil, one or all members of the Axis of Evil, as they did with the rail sabotage. They recently tried to blame that on the Iranians. I'm not sure what evidence they have of that, but I guess they can just say anything and we have to believe it. And if you don't believe it, then you're going to get canceled, which is why I'm not going to speculate too much today on the events that unfolded in the Golan Heights in Israel. Let's just take them at their word and let's just presume that this was an attack by Hezbollah, a targeted attack, which seems to make very little sense whatsoever. That this would be something that was done deliberately, because of course they know what the response is going to be. This is going to give Netanyahu exactly what he wants, a reason to go to war long term and to get the war started, in fact, before Trump takes office. Now, how convenient is the timing that these things keep happening on Saturdays? I mean, just last week, they kicked the hornet's nest that is Yemen on a Saturday, and today we have this major incident also happening on a Saturday. Why that's important? Well, the price of oil isn't as spooked when you do things on Saturdays because, of course, the ticker doesn't start up till, I guess, what would be Sunday night in some places, Monday morning. And that's when the trading for oil begins. And so it gives the market a little bit of time to get desensitized to the shock of all of that. So I think there's something to do with that going on. The reason why these events seem to happen on Saturdays always, it always seems to happen right at the beginning of a Saturday, in fact, you know, which seems to be very convenient in the very least for commodities traders in terms of keeping volatility to a minimum. Regardless, Israel thinks that this was a, I believe it's called a Falak 1 missile that came from the arsenal of the Shiite Hezbollah group, and they think that this was a deliberate act. I see no strategic benefit to Hezbollah to do this, as I've already said. I think, if anything, you could say this was an errant missile. Some people are claiming, even the BBC suggested, that it might be some sort of interceptor gone awry. That could be the case, but the official narrative now, according to the U.S. government, the all-knowing U.S. government, who apparently has assets in the region that can determine this, they said that this is, in fact, the work of Hezbollah. If you don't know what I'm talking about, basically 10 children, I believe, were killed today, 30 casualties total, by a missile in the Golan Heights, what Hezbollah and some of the Axis considers the occupied Golan Heights. I'm not going to go into specifics about the culture of that region because I'm not an expert on it. I could use the actual specific names, but I don't think it's going to, it's kind of out of a lot of our lane to discuss that much. Really, we're more generalist on this channel. So to speak generally, this is definitely the license Netanyahu needs to finally go to war. And apparently, according to Israel Channel 14, which is a mainstream network in Israel, they are claiming that Israel now has what it needs. They have the approval from the United States to carry out an operation against Hezbollah. We know it's going to start as a small-scale operation, and it is going to intensify. Now, in terms of Israel's response to this, they've already responded by starting to bomb southern Lebanon. In Syria, thousands of paramilitary forces in Iraq and Syria have been put on a high state of alert. In fact, Lebanon has evacuated numerous places in the south in anticipation of an Israeli response. Again, Lebanon denies deliberately striking this. They are claiming that this is an Iron Dome interceptor that caused this. Now, we've seen this happen in Ukraine several times, where initially reports suggest that the Russians targeted civilians, and then all this evidence comes out about how, well, it was actually an Iranian missile that intercepted, and then you just don't hear about the story after that. The story just gets forgotten about, right? But Hezbollah is denying it completely, so I guess it's going to be up to the public to determine what's what, but basically now they have, because all of the hawks are calling for war as a result of it. They are just seething for a major conflict at this point in time. And a lot of the Israelis, too, are now going to need to be mollified because they are going to want some sort of retribution for this. So in order to assuage their rage, they're going to have to retaliate in a major way. And Iran has in fact said the following. They have said that any infringement or aggression by the Zionist regime against the national sovereignty of Lebanon will be met with a decisive and united response across the entire resistance axis. I repeat, a decisive and unified response. That's from a high-ranking Iranian official. Now, from Israel's point of view, they are at war with seven countries. They're at war with Yemen, of course. They're still awaiting the major Houthi response. The Houthis are just looking for any excuse. So I think that when you do finally see the Houthis respond or Hezbollah respond, it's going to be coordinated. Why wouldn't it be? Why wouldn't you try to overwhelm the systems at once? So you have the Houthis in Yemen. You have Iran, who, of course, is the nexus of it all. Allegedly, you have the Iraqi resistance. You have Syria or aspects of Syria. You have Lebanon, you have the West Bank, and you have the Gaza Strip, okay? So from Israel's perspective, they're fighting a war on seven fronts. They don't have the conventional means to fight a war on seven fronts. And if they all turned up the heat at once, the U.S. would have no choice but to bring back all of those strike carrier groups. And I think they're just retooling them right now for an inevitable conflict once Trump takes office, if he does in fact win. Or it really won't matter anyways, because despite the claims that Kamala is anti-Israel and anti-Netanyahu. She, of course, met with him in secret. And that's how that dance usually goes. The Democrats will say that they don't support and, you know, gotta, you know, care for the civilians of Gaza, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, in an underhanded way, they still will send the weapons and they continue to funnel that financial and military support to the Israelis all the same. So it really makes no difference. It's just one is explicit, one is implicit. So we are going to see a major ramping up of hostilities here in the near future. This is another flashbulb event that Netanyahu needed to justify further military action. It's very likely that the only way they're going to be able to fight a conflict on so many fronts is by using unconventional methods, quite possibly EMP weapons, of course. Some Israeli officials have bragged about these unconventional weapon systems that they're claiming are non-nuclear. However, they're also referring to EMP weapons, referring to nuclear weapons as EMP primary devices. So not seeing the nuclear effect as a residual one. Okay, so they very well could make the argument that we're going to detonate a high altitude, low-yield nuclear weapon that are going to have EMP effects that they're going to be able to somehow target in and around the Lebanon region, which of course still has all the travel advisories against it, and ever so timely because a lot of those were supposed to expire at the end of July. But here we go. Now the war is absolutely baked in and guaranteed. But they're saying that they have these unconventional weapons that they're going to use. This, of course, will cause the Iranians to get involved. And I still can't believe that oil is only at $76 a barrel. It makes little to no sense whatsoever. The only sense it makes is that if they were assuming that the global economy was going to go to complete crap, okay, and that Trump was going to get into office and that he was just going to start drilling like there was no tomorrow. I'm sure there's a lot of red tape and loopholes that still need to, I don't think that's going to happen overnight. And it's questionable whether or not they even can bring those systems online fast enough. So I think that right now people are being either overly optimistic or there's a lot of market manipulation going on the oil front. Of course, if a war breaks out in the Middle East, what people are not factoring in, whether Saudi Arabia gets involved or not, if Saudi Arabia lets its airspace be utilized by the West and Israel, then their critical infrastructure will be targeted. And all of the Emirates states and all of these states that are going to participate could potentially get in a shooting match. And you could start to see oil refineries and oil wells start to be targeted, which of course will drastically increase the price of oil. Then you might have a blockade on the Persian Gulf, worst case scenario, the Strait of Hormuz, I should say, by the Iranians, and then it's lights out. Right now, the U.S. does have an amphibious strike group there. They currently have the WASP amphibious ready group with a 24-hour Marine Expeditionary Unit. They're currently stationed, I think they're in the Mediterranean, or are they in the Persian Gulf? Either way, they're within earshot of all of this and are ready to partake in hostilities and come to Israel's defense. But we know, just based on what happened in April, that the response from the Israelis is still going to be measured and limited because they simply don't have the conventional capability. Now, there's been all kinds of talk since then about nuking Iran, and it appears as though with Netanyahu's recent address to Congress that they're really starting to shift the conversation, the shift the enmity of the central enmity of the United States towards Iran away from Russia. But that situation, people presume that it's cooling down, but it isn't. It isn't cooling down at all. In fact, that one I'm quite concerned about. If you haven't seen my video that I released, I think it was yesterday actually. Go and check that video out because I talk about how the Russians are making these covert preparations, getting hospitals ready, military hospitals in and around major cities far from the front in Ukraine, all under the auspices of the Russian Ministry of Defense. So something is still getting ready to cook on the Ukrainian-European front as well. For all we know, this Paris thing is a message being sent by Russia to Paris. This is a major cyber attack perpetrated against, you know, Paris by the Axis. And of course, the United States was warning about terrorist attacks throughout this period of time. So, and we're only on day one of the Olympics, okay? So again, a lot of Christians are celebrating this. But again, you know, this could be something that triggers some sort of tit-for-tat response behind the scenes, and it's only going to be ultimately escalatory for all of us. In terms of what's going on in Ukraine, well, apparently there was an accounting error. Now they're going to be getting another $2 billion because, oh, we shit the bed. Actually, you know, we can still give you another $2 billion worth of weapons, okay? According to some analysts on the Ukraine front, they are saying that if Ukraine does not broker some sort of peace deal before winter, they're looking at total economic collapse and famine because they're exporting a lot of their grain, relying on imports. If those imports are potentially cut off or they don't have the infrastructure in place in order to facilitate the distribution to whoever still lives there, well, then that's going to be exceptionally problematic. So we're already halfway through the summer now, so Ukraine has to make some serious decisions. We have corporate insiders dumping shares at the fastest pace they have in over a decade. According to Michael Saylor, Bitcoin could potentially trade anywhere from $3 million to $49 million. What the hell is this guy smoking? For that to happen, you're talking about a valuation of a market cap of hundreds of trillions of dollars. It's just nonsense to think that it is going to trade that high. And then you have Donald Trump saying things like Bitcoin could potentially trade higher than gold. And I don't know if he's just trying to be hip or if he's just trying to appeal to that audience. Freaking mosquitoes in here. But I, you know, again, it's all part of the deception. It's to take attention away from precious metals, which is, I assure you, what the elites want. They don't want something that if there was a power outage in Paris, what are you going to do with your Bitcoin? Now, you could argue and say, well, what are you going to do with your gold? Sure, but at least you have something tangible. And then the other thing is, what happens when all of that capital that is supposed to go into Bitcoin and all these cryptocurrencies, where is that capital coming from? Well, you're divesting from the market. You're divesting from commodities. You're taking that money and that capital, that energy, out of a place where you can actually do stuff with it and putting it into a big casino. Okay, and so that's the downside of that. Let's get some lights in here if we can. Can we get some lights in here? There we go. All right, so in terms of Russia and Trump, I must reiterate, and I've said this a lot, Russia has no illusions about Trump. And this is from the Kremlin. This is from Dmitry Peskov. He has said, despite praises for victories over Napoleon and Hitler, the Republican is still part of the Russophobic U.S. elite. So the Russians know that all of this bluster about Trump ending the war in 24 hours, this is part of the reason why they haven't even paid any attention to it, because they just know it's all theatrics, okay? It's not worth a damn thing, because they know that there's nothing Trump can do to truly end the conflict, because right now the ball, from some people's point of view, is in the Russians' court. The war will end when Russia chooses. I'm not entirely convinced that they're completely dominating the entire front, but it does appear that Ukraine is definitely on the back foot at this point in time. In terms of peace talks, Sergei Lavrov, Russia's foreign minister, has said that Russia does not pay attention to Kiev's claims that it is ready for peace talks, as it's known to have flip-flopped on the issue, and so they just ignore it once again. So that's essentially what is going on there. There was an earthquake detected at a North Korean nuclear test site, an earthquake. This is not the first time. In fact, in the last year, there's been a couple occasions in which earthquakes have been detected at former nuclear test sites. So there's speculation that they are doing underground nuclear testing there. California, interesting situation. A crisis situation unfolded in the California desert. And this is why you need to make sure, whether it's winter or in the dead of summer in these very hot places, that you have the means to survive by yourself and keep yourself cool. Thousands of people headed to Las Vegas have been stuck on the I-40 for many hours, running out of gas and water. This is all due to the lithium battery truck fire that closed down I-15 yesterday. Very same thing, you know, that's happening up here with the wildfires. Now you got a big wildfire brewing down there in California, 350,000 acres from one fire alone in the past 72 hours, becoming one of the fastest growing wildfires in California history. We're having the same situation here. We just have so much standing dead timber due to invasive species, beetle kill, which of course was caused by man. Okay, so this is a anthropogenic induced phenomena, these wildfires, no matter how you slice it, whether you want to say it's due to record high temperatures or whatever. Of course, we have had a lot more moisture this year. Much of the country is out of the drought. However, despite that, a lot of these places were so bone dry for so long, and a lot of there's so much standing dead timber that these places just burn. And when they burn fast, and then you throw lightning and wind in these high pressure, low pressure mixes in there, and it causes these fires to spread very fast. And that's what we're seeing right now. I actually thought that we were going to get out of this year without experiencing smoke, because prior to, I don't know, like 10 years ago, I don't remember smoke. I don't remember ever seeing smoke. But now it's an annual occurrence. It's every year we see smoke nowadays. So I think I got that son of a bitch. We also have more attacks on oil refineries in Russia in the Kursk region. That's ongoing. So nothing is de-escalating. You know, we're still more in debt than ever before. You still have Hunger Games District 1 thespians doing their thing to try to trigger all the theocrats and get everybody infighting. It's all downhill from here, folks. That's why I'm in this bug-infested tractor right now, trying to get it in while the getting is good. You gotta do the work, because again, if you think there's just gonna be some automated process and you're just gonna be able to have a turnkey solution, no matter how much money you throw at this problem, you need to get things started and you need to know how things work, you need to fix things. And it's a constant struggle, it's a constant war with nature. And I know some people don't like viewing it that way. You got to live at an equilibrium and have a symbiotic relationship with your homestead. But there is a battle that you're fighting, especially when you're trying to do something within a sufficient scale that you have enough redundancy there, right? And so that's what I'm trying to do. And I think a lot of the reason why I'm struggling this year is because we're building everything out. I think once we enter maintenance, it's going to be a lot easier. But that's the importance of getting out there and building the whole thing in the first place. There's just so much to do. I think once I have the greenhouse built, you know, once I have all the raised garden beds built, once I have the orchard up and running, I got the irrigation in recently, so that is huge. Just having irrigation from a ground well water source, I mean, that's a huge load off my shoulders, not having to manually water. It was just a pain in the ass. You know, once we get all of the defensive aspects of the homestead worked out, and the fencing and the roads and the other various outbuildings, then things are going to be a lot easier. I think it'll be self-guiding after that. But to build it out, you know, now is the time to do it. Don't wait for big disaster. We know that we're on the precipice of many different types of collapses. So just get it done now. Don't hesitate. Do it. I know the price of land is high. I would actually say that now it appears as though there are certain places throughout Canada where the price of land is coming down. I would say if I had to redo this over again, you know, maybe we're going to have to do another episode with Curtis Stone to just talk about strategic relocation, because I think if I already only being here for 3 months, I think I would do things differently already. And I think that you could find a piece of land that nobody wanted backed up against some crown land or something that was just, you know, nothing as far as, you know, your drone can see. You can get land like that for relatively cheap. The problem is it's the access is usually difficult. And in addition to that, it's also usually heavily treed. So the land isn't broken at all. And so you're going to have to, you know, contend with that. But you can still get land. You could put a trailer up there. You can put a little tiny home. There's a lot you could do right now still. But I'm telling you, you got to give yourself a year or so to get situated. And that's why you do it now. Hopefully, we have that much time. I'm hoping that we do. Of course, I think that window closes and gets shorter and shorter by the day. I'm getting chewed up by mosquitoes. I got to get going. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Thanks for watching. Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe. Canadian Prepper out.